He is one of America's prominent sports commentators and columnists,
known for his fearless opinions and passionate dialogue.
I know, it's sad, but the best sports conversation has absolutely nothing to do with sports.
He has perfected the Daily Sports Podcast, having produced hundreds of topical, credible shows without even a hint of fake news.
No filters, no mute buttons, no BS, just me and whatever the hell I feel like talking about.
He has done 1,700 TV shows, written 8,000 columns, broadcast hundreds of talk shows, published a book.
He has covered every major sports event nationally and worldwide.
And yet, we still can't shut him up.
The ceiling is the roof.
And now from Los Angeles, inside his studio by the Pacific Ocean,
where he plans on hanging out with a beer immediately after this podcast is recorded.
Oh, man.
Here he is, Jay Mariotti.
The show is unmuted. I'm Jay in Los Angeles, and after all the savage dunks and the violent rejections, all the physics-defying viral videos that vaulted Zion Williamson into the realm of basketball evangelism, I am stunned today to report this. Our thundering brute of a 285-pound transformer superhero has been silenced. The Zion King will not win a national championship in his only season of college basketball, but then again, maybe we shouldn't be so stunned. As he was anointing himself as the sport's next one-name-only force, you kind of sensed Zion might not take over a game if a very smart defensive coach, such as Michigan State's Tom Izzo, crowded Williamson inside and forced his teammates to win or lose the game. And sure enough, Zion's usual dominance inside the paint wasn't a factor in the final minutes as teammate R.J. Barrett took charge and missed big shot after big shot in the final 90 seconds. And then that painful free throw miss with 5 seconds left that left Duke a point short in that devastating loss. Barrett, Trey Jones, Cam Reddish all devastated afterwards, sobbing together in the locker room. Zion there with them. And you think Barrett didn't lose several million bucks in that sequence, as NBA franchises now almost certainly will draft Ja Morant over Barrett. And Reddish, once viewed as a high lottery pick, did not provide the necessary consistent three-point shooting when Zion and Barrett were packed in. So it turns out even Mike Krzyzewski, the legend, could not maximize one of the most talented freshman classes ever, with Duke really lucky not to have lost in earlier rounds in this NCAA tournament. And it turns out Izzo didn't need Khalil Mack to beat Zion. He just needed some savvy veterans. So now, the Final Four becomes a kind of bizarre crapshoot with Izzo and his savvy floor leader, Cassius Winston, taking on magical, well-coached, come-from-nowhere Texas Tech. That's what I said. If you're paying attention, you know all about Texas Tech. Just days ago, Izzo, of course, was excoriated by critics for berating and lunging at a freshman earlier in the tournament. And while his team did wake up and respond in kind, do not be surprised if the Spartans lose to Tech, as there are reasons to fear the Beard, that being Coach Chris Beard, who is one of the great defensive masters in recent times. In the other bracket, you have to feel good for Virginia and Tony Bennett, whose much-mocked misery finally ended with a miracle shot in regulation that created that victory. And we do have a villain. Everybody needs a villain. In this case, Auburn's Bruce Pearl, whose scandal-marred career now includes some evidence that he's actually one hell of a coach as well. It's a quirky but wide-open Final Four that almost makes us forget the college hoops as a FBI wiretapped cesspool of scummery. But not really.
All you need to know about sports today in 15 minutes, or maybe 18. You know, depending on the Warriors, the Steelers, Trump, and the LeBron James Media Network.
The NBA, which has managed to mostly avoid the NFL's wave of criminal issues, is dealing today with a very serious allegation. Did Kristaps Porzingis, the 7'3" superstar in waiting, rape a female neighbor he had invited to his luxury Manhattan apartment last year on the very night he suffered a devastating knee injury? And how tone-deaf and brain-dead is Mark Cuban to actually trade for Porzingis when he was told of the allegations by the New York Knicks, who reportedly told Cuban that Porzingis was a victim of extortion? Huh? Whatever. I don't know why the Knicks are in position to make that judgment, but that should have raised a red flag in Dallas. Instead, Cuban went straight for the bait. And as the NYPD investigates, this is yet another potential nightmare for the controversial Mavericks owner and Shark Tank star, who is, of course, an aspiring presidential candidate who already has dealt with a sexual harassment scandal in the Mavs organization. I repeat, would you really want this man to be your president? Porzingis' accuser didn't report the allegation to police for more than a year because she says he promised to give her $68,000 in shut-up money to pay for her brother's college tuition, but then reneged. So, is this a case of extortion? The NYPD says not yet. She is credible, according to the NYPD, and she claims Porzingis punched her in the face during the alleged assault while referring to the woman who is black as, quote, my bitch, unquote, and, quote, my slave, unquote, Porzingis's alleged words. That this is coming up 14 months later does not help her case, but in today's world, as I have said repeatedly, I would refrain from making rash judgments. This is an emerging crisis on many levels, and if I'm Mark Cuban, I'm not running for president of the United States. No, I'm reexamining my continuing lack of moral judgment as a highly visible NBA owner. What was he thinking? Dodger Stadium has served for decades as escapist heaven, tucked in a ravine off Vin Scully Avenue, filled with statues and palm trees and Dodger dogs. But these days, it has become an ongoing crime scene, with a brawl breaking out in the parking lot after a marathon game over the weekend, leaving a 47-year-old man hospitalized and on life support with major head injuries, and the man's wife pleading for the public's help in finding the attacker or attackers. The beating came 8 years to the day after a San Francisco Giants fan, Brian Stowe, was attacked by two Dodger fans in the very same parking lot and sustained brain damage, leaving him permanently disabled after 9 surgeries. Last summer, a 79-year-old woman died at Dodger Stadium when a foul ball sailed over the protective netting behind home plate and cracked straight into her skull. She died 4 days later. When the Dodgers asked to honor Linda Goldblum on opening day, her family declined the offer, preferring that the team extend the netting. The Dodgers have no plans to do so. As it is, the Dodgers disregard their vast numbers of loyal fans by blacking out telecasts to 70% of the Southern California market while pocketing $8 billion for that exclusive TV deal. Now, you risk your life when you enter that ballpark. This is about the last story Major League Baseball needs as it tries to maintain a teetering relationship with the waning masses. It's supposed to be time for Dodger baseball, not Dodger mayhem. Back to the Final Four, where Tom Izzo becomes the star of the show in Minneapolis after a rough time off the court the last couple of seasons. You'll remember last year, Izzo was not an effective orator or communicator when leadership was so desperately needed at Michigan State amid the Larry Nassar sex abuse scandal, and Izzo was much too defensive about criminal issues within his own program. But that university, in the middle of nowhere, always gives Izzo a pass because he wins. And now, he's only 2 wins away from his 3rd national championship after winning for only the 2nd time in 13 meetings against Mike Krzyzewski, who was filled afterward with praise for Izzo and Michigan State. Here was Izzo.
Well, first of all, I'm not at his level yet. You know, when you look at the championships he's won, the number of games he's won, but I am in his arena, sort of, and I'm telling you, I was moved by how I think I would have been crushed. I think I would have gave him credit. I think I would have gave him a hug and wished him luck. But the way he was and the way his players were, it made me feel good about my profession again, because I've had some question marks in the last couple of years. And listen, nobody does it better. And the reason they don't do it better is because if you look at it athletically, academically, socially, if you look at the consistency, it's just year after year after year. And yet I say it's what keeps me driving. You know, I've always got some goal that I haven't reached yet, and probably never going to reach some of them. You know, they always say that everybody's looking for perfection and you're never going to get it. I'm never going to get some of those goals, but it's fun to see someone who's done it with the class he's done it in, and then to try to achieve some similar things.
It's possible only college hoops aficionados know Chris Beard, but what they do know about him is revelatory. This is the hottest coach in the business, pursued by UCLA and other programs, and Beard has maxed out a Texas Tech team with one star, two grad transfers, and a point guard who is full of Bologna. No, he's from Italy. That's just a bad pun. Sorry. They play clampdown defense, and they beat two big-time opponents with explosive offenses in Gonzaga and Michigan. The Red Raiders are real, and while they don't have to worry about Williamson now, they do have a possible top seven NBA lottery pick in forward Jarrett Culver, who might just dominate this game. They've got a shot blocker in Tariq Owens, and they've got a transfer from South Dakota named Matt Mooney, and a shooter in the Italian import, Davidad Moretti. Did I get that right? I'm Italian. I need to get that first name right. Here we go. Davidad Moretti. There it is. Mariotti gets... If Mariotti can't get Moretti right, then there's something wrong in the world. And they have Beard, a character, to say the least, who learned under Bob Knight years ago in Lubbock, and yet was smart enough to take the very best lessons of the curmudgeon while leaving the worst alone. Talk about paying your dues. Chris Beard has had 12 jobs in basketball, once coaching at Fort Scott Community College, and also a minor league team called the South Carolina Warriors. But he persevered and got his break at Arkansas Little Rock, which beat Purdue in the 2016 tournament. And then Beard jumped to UNLV for a short time, then quickly bolted to Texas Tech in the wilds of West Texas, where he has become a cult hero. He begs students to come to games. He touts Whataburger every chance he gets. And he hosts a weekly TV show called Fireside Chat, and it works. Here was Beard reminding the world that the very best college coaches aren't surprised by Texas Tech reaching the Final Four.
Coach Sampson's been to Final Fours and won championships, and I'll never forget, he told me right after that game, we're in the two locker rooms, he kind of grabbed me and goes, Chris, you guys are really good. And you know, your new pieces, you guys are going to be good. You can compete for a Big 12 championship. You see, you hear that, and, you know. Then we went to play Duke in Madison Square Garden, and after the game, right after the game in the handshake line, and then later on in the hallway, Coach K had some great things about our city. He said, hey, what about a heavyweight battle? What a great college game. You guys are really good. Good luck this season. You guys are going to be really good. And then he wrote me a letter a couple weeks later. Then we played Memphis and Miami, and Rick Pitino was at the game. And he came in our locker room after the game and talked to our players, and he told our guys, hey, I've had teams less talented than y'all make it to Final Fours. It's all about the intangibles, the toughness, the unselfishness, the things that it appears that you guys stand for. And I can go down the line. So Bill Self in our league thought that we were good enough to make a real run in this tournament. So we don't mind the underdog chip on the shoulder part of our story, but I think you disrespect our players a little bit when you don't understand we got really good college players. And I think we're one of the best teams in the country this year.
And to see Virginia and Bennett make a joyful run to the Final Four via that miracle ending warms the soul. This team collapsed in infamy a year ago, losing to Baltimore, Maryland County as the first top seed ever to lose to a number 16 seed in tournament history. And the burden on Bennett and his players has been simple. Purge that nightmare. But it's been painful for them, onerous. It's been hard to deal with. Every time they looked like they were going to fall flat in a game, choke alerts were out, many jokes, many social media memes. But then the other night, it looks like they were going to lose. They're trailing in the final seconds against the magnificent Carson Edwards and Purdue. And Ty Jerome misses a free throw. And the ball bounces down court, seemingly assuring yet another heartbreaking loss in March. Until suddenly, Clark retrieves the ball. You saw it. And he fires the 60-foot pass to Mamadi Diakite, who hit a mid-range heave as time expired for Virginia. No, they're not choking dogs. Suddenly, karma on Virginia's side. And if marksman Kyle Guy truly has escaped his shooting slump after his three-point spree the other night, then absolutely the Cavaliers should win and advance to the national title game. As I predicted 3 weeks ago, by the way, I didn't have them beating Auburn. I had them beating Kentucky, but hey, I had Virginia getting here. A lot of people said, no way. And if Kyle Guy's jumper is off, obviously this team can stagnate offensively very easily. And as you saw with Auburn, that's a fun, deep team. They're not tired. They can beat you with many weapons. Then that way Virginia goes down. Bennett has won 83% of his games the last 6 years in the jungle that is the ACC, and he has been National Coach of the Year twice. But finally, after a hellish 2 years of pressure, remember back in 2017, Virginia didn't even crack 40 points in losing. Bennett has shaken that weight. It's gone now, and he can concentrate on fulfilling his program's mission to win a national title. Here was Tony, a man of Christian faith, no relation to the crooner, who is built so differently than the egotists and the cheaters throughout his profession. Bennett is somebody you root for, especially when he let out a, did you hear this? That uncustomary scream when he finished cutting down the nets.
You know, to have a phenomenal year last year and then to have it end how it did was so hard without DeAndre and a lot of things, but I've said it before in a strange way. It was a painful gift because it made us draw near to what really mattered. On the court, it's the closest we've been. Off the court, the things that matter. Because everybody comes at you in different ways, and it kind of forces you to know what you're about. But these guys, we talked about it. It's a quote from a TED Talk we gave along, showed them to them. It's a saying about adversity. If you learn to use it right, it'll buy you a ticket to a place you couldn't have gone any other way. And all we went through prepared us for this game, this setting. The fact that we won, I don't know how that all happened, but I know how it happened, but we had some good fortune too.
And Virginia will play Auburn, which makes alumnus Charles Barkley very proud, especially after the Tigers beat a Kentucky team whose coach, John Calipari, says he urinated on the Barkley statue on the Auburn campus. First of all, I didn't even know Barkley had a statue. And would Calipari urinate on it? Yeah, I think he probably would. So Charles had double vindication Sunday. Pearl has been in trouble, it seems, his entire college coaching career, including at Tennessee, where he was fired for lying to the NCAA during a 2011 investigation of his program, and he was out of the sport for 3 years doing TV work for ESPN and marketing for a wholesale grocer. Then, somehow, he got a second chance at Auburn, and then two of his assistants were nailed in the FBI probe, including Chuck Person, who will serve prison time for accepting bribes to steer players toward certain agents. Two of those players, Dangelo Purifoy and Austin Wiley, are part of Auburn's rotation, yet Auburn still rewarded Pearl with a five-year contract anyway. Oh, Bruce didn't know about what Chuck Person was doing. No, no way. And through the stench, Pearl has assembled this entertaining team that has won 12 straight and did beat Kentucky without his best player, Chuma Okeke, who suffered a torn ACL. And yet the Tigers win. Pearl is an absolute character. If Pearl and Beard faced each other in a national championship game, that might be the apocalypse. The stadium in Minneapolis just might implode. Yeah. Bruce Pearl is the guy who once sat shirtless with orange body paint all over himself in the student section at a Tennessee women's game. He will get more attention than he deserves this weekend, and I trust he's going to be grilled about all of his scandals. Here is Bruce Pearl, Slayer of Blue Bloods, Kentucky, and North Carolina. This is his moment.
Yeah, it's spectacular. I'm happy for Auburn. I'm happy for these kids. I'm happy for the SEC. It's almost surreal to think that Auburn is going. Look at our path, New Mexico State and then Kansas, North Carolina, Kentucky. It's historic. You know, now we want to try to take advantage of it. And we know there are great teams there. I'd like to try to act like I've been there before, but I can't because I ain't been there before.
And here was Auburn's most famous alum, Barkley, reduced to tears in the CBS studio.
An interesting.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Auburn advances to the Final Four for the first time in school history. Final in overtime. Auburn 77, Kentucky 71. Welcome back to our New York studio.
Congratulations, well, Chuck.
Oh, man.
Man, that's big, Barkley. Let it out. He's crying over here, man.
Yeah, I'm going with chalk here, Michigan State and Virginia. But wouldn't Texas Tech Auburn be so damned bizarre? Fun and thrilling as the tournament has been, the toxic cloud of scandal and the ongoing FBI probe will continue to hang over Minneapolis this weekend, as it should. When a scumbag celebrity lawyer such as Michael Avenatti claims to have information that Nike has been funneling illicit payments to high school players and their families, just as Adidas was doing it through agents and assistant coaches, then we have every right to ask if all the programs and all the shoe companies are cheating and just the dumb ones get caught. This is a $1 billion a year tournament, remember, and a $14 billion a year campus sports industry. And while the players do get their full academic rides and many advantages that serve them well through life, they should be compensated to some degree when the TV networks, the apparel companies, the universities, and the coaches certainly are cashing in. Cha-ching. In that sense, when Williamson was injured as his shoe exploded this season, that episode drove an urgency that the NBA must allow elite players right out of high school into the league immediately and dump the one-and-done rule. After the loss on Sunday, Zion almost sounded relieved in a way that the season-long hype and pressure were now behind him as he heads to the NBA.
My bond is very deep. I don't think nobody will ever understand it because all season long, you know, we were under, you know, a microscope, like, since before, even before we went to Canada with the little episodes. You know, people say, you know, we wouldn't do this, we wouldn't do that, and I think we, you know, like, exceeded all their expectations. You know, I'm very proud of my brothers, you know. It was a hell of a season, you know. We battled through it all, like, through adversity with injuries and everything. And, you know, for us to make it this far, you know, I'm proud of everybody in this locker room. So, you know, our bond is something you build when you just go to war together.
How would you sum up this whole experience individually for yourself?
If you know me, I don't care about individuals, so, like, I couldn't sum that up for you, like, even if I wanted to. But, I mean, I guess it's been exciting. I mean, it has been exciting. But, you know, just being around my brothers the whole time, you know, that's something, you know, like, I'm never going to forget.
So, you talk played your last basketball game?
I mean, obviously it's a high possibility, but I'm not really focused on that right now.
Yet for every Williamson who is ready at age 18, so many others are not, and they are deluded by immediate entry into the NBA when the college experience could have provided a bridge to maturity and growth. As I've said often here, college athletes should be allowed to profit from the use of their names, images, and likenesses, as Senator Christopher Murphy has proposed on Capitol Hill, and as Coach K said, the college game could be crippled by the abolition of the one-and-done rule if serious discussions don't take place. Because face it, without Zion and the ever-present gambling aspect, how many people would care about college basketball this season? Coach K cares. He's the one who said no to the NBA on several occasions, and he cares about the college game, but it's about to evaporate again.
We should already have a plan. And I think what you do is the NBA has a plan, then we have a plan, and you say, well, do they mesh? Okay, oh, that's pretty good, your plan. We work a little bit better than our government, you know, where we don't just sit on both sides of the aisle. But to work together for the good of the game, and the game is good if we take care of the kids who play it. And we're in this really changing time that it behooves us to be ahead of it. And that's why to comment on what's going to happen, we don't know what's going to happen. We should be figuring that out in a smoother way. And I would really be a proponent for all of you to push that issue.
And without one and done's, a concept that Coach K once swore off before he had to accept it, would Duke become a more ordinary program? Krzyzewski has shown no signs of retirement, but if he, you got to think about this. He's not going to win national title number 6. He's going to lose all 4 of those freshmen to the NBA. He's going to have to rebuild immediately. He's seeing the difficulty of rebuilding and then expecting a team that has never played this many games in a season to keep up the energy and the momentum through a Final Four. This team hit the wall on Sunday. Maybe Mike Krzyzewski, who I've known forever, needs to enjoy life instead of enduring the headaches of these radically changing times. He is, in my book, the greatest college basketball coach of all time, including John Wooden. Given the complexities of the late 20th century and now the early 21st century, he has navigated it well. He stays out of trouble sometimes. I don't know how. I wonder, like everybody else does. Just the same, though, it might be important for Coach K to stay. This is a sport where Auburn, as I said, is allowed to play in the tournament and reach the Final Four with wiretap-tainted players. This is a sport where wiretaps are more common than tip-offs. This is a sport where the Cal Irvine coach kept baiting Oregon's Louis King as Queen and had to apologize to King and his parents for the obvious overtones, the insensitivity. Say what you will about Mike Krzyzewski, the most polarizing coach in the history of college sports and the ruler of an elitist program that people hate, but he is the smartest man in the arena in a sport of way too many idiots, and we could have used him in Minneapolis. It's been a long time since the NBA had an MVP race as compelling and close as that of James Harden versus Giannis Antetokounmpo. And now that Giannis is dealing with the same right ankle sprain for a banged-up Milwaukee team about to clinch home court advantage throughout the playoffs, might the resting of Antetokounmpo give Harden just enough room to steal his second straight MVP award? Chances are Giannis does win because he's new, he's refreshing, he's the pulverizing force of the small market Bucks, and also because he's as dominant defensively with his long frame and arms as he is on the offensive end. And also because Harden won last season, and he does tick off purists with his annoying way of drawing fouls. But like it or not, Harden is an offensive genius with his assortment of drives and step-back threes and floaters. And though opponents know he's coming with his mind-boggling 1,200 isolation possessions while the Rockets have dealt with their injuries, his 37-point-per-game average is the highest in the NBA since Michael Jordan. He scored 30-plus points 32 games in a row to elevate Houston in the Western standings. And he has recorded 28 40-point games this season. Only MJ had more since the NBA-ABA merger. The kicker, James Harden, is scoring more points per minute than anybody since Wilt freaking Chamberlain. And if you think he's just a gunner, James averages 7.5 assists a game and just recorded his fifth career 50-point triple-double. Harden has had the ball in his hands more than any player in the league, obviously, but he delivers with astounding consistency as a positionless savant. Right now, voters say the race is too close to call, and let's hope, as Giannis has suggested, that he isn't a victim of basketball xenophobia and the politics that swirl about the NBA. He's not controlling like LeBron or brooding like KD. He's not on social media in a big way. He's just Giannis Antetokounmpo from Greece, and he's loving life over here. We should all appreciate that he says he won't change his personality to fit into American mainstream culture to become the face of this league. We're going to accept him for who he is. So after much thought, this is so close. I say Giannis, who had a rare lapse of ego recently when he followed a dunk with a "I'm the blinking MVP" chant, I say he wins the award, and I would vote for him because he's a complete player, whereas Harden has his defensive lapses. But offensively, Harden just overwhelms the rest of the league with this machine, this James Harden juggernaut every night offensively. I'm going to regret this because what James Harden is doing now, it's Kobe stuff. It's Jordan stuff. As for LeBron James, he has become a basketball afterthought, free to promote Space Jam 2 and have his Hollywood power lunches now that he's been excused from further games by the Lakers, thus ending a depressing and embarrassing thud of a first season in LA. All you need to know is this: the Clippers have made the playoffs amid all of their adversity, while the Lakers missed the playoffs, largely because LeBron sabotaged the franchise with his political bullshit and dysfunction. I love doing podcasts. I can say bullshit. His attitude and his body language were appalling at times, and he did little to make the younger players better, trashing the Lakers season. Yes, he did. He also trashed the New Orleans Pelicans season, and he turned off these young guys by using his partner in control freakery, Rich Paul, in a lame attempt to try to trade for Anthony Davis. Turns out his teammates, including Kyle Kuzma, called out LeBron. I would love to have been there that day for that negative body language. And all in all, no major free agent is coming near LeBron this summer, just as they've avoided his megalomania in previous off seasons. Hello, Paul George. If LeBron doesn't want to play basketball in L.A. because it looks bleak and he's never going to make the playoffs, and he just wants to make movies and documentaries because he needs to save face, then here's a suggestion. Retire, dude. Leave. Because you're stuck with this team because you play politics and nobody wants to come here. Durant said it. He said it's a creepy environment. He's right. And there are too many sycophants sucking up to LeBron James in the media. Bill Plaschke, God love him, torches LeBron James. I thought I was alone. Bill Plaschke, go for it. I love it. You got to read Bill's column on LeBron on Sunday and his previous column on LeBron. We're all kind of sick of LeBron. People in the media just don't like to admit it. And if he does disappear to his office on the Warner Brothers lot, it's fine with me. As for Space Jam 2, LeBron, you're ripping off Michael, the true greatest of all time, by the way. Though Kobe, the other night, did you see this? He declared that he's the greatest of all time when James Corden, the guy late night CBS, forced Kobe to answer that question or otherwise eat a slab of cow tongue. So here's how Kobe dealt with that challenge.
Kobe.
Yes.
I would like you to rank these legendary basketball players from best to worst. LeBron James, Michael Jordan,
yeah,
and Kobe Bryant.
Seriously?
Best to worst, or
seriously,
tuck into that cow tongue, baby.
You know what I'm going to answer, but I'm not going to answer it because then everybody's going to sit there and debate about it. So I'm just going to take a bite of this.
Bite the other end. Bite that end.
Why that end?
Bite that end.
Why?
This
you
one?
Can answer. No. You can answer. It's pretty straightforward, I think. What do you reckon? Right,
fine. I'm the best. Michael's second best. LeBron's best.
And the Warriors can't start their latest title drive soon enough with Boogie Cousins ejected Sunday night for throwing a hostile elbow at an opponent as their problems with officials continue. Jordan Bell last week was suspended for playing a prank on assistant coach Mike Brown. He actually charged a candle to Brown's hotel bill. Are they mentally ready for the postseason? Yes, Golden State will be ready. We've seen this before. But I will say this. Sometimes the Warriors dynasty is much clumsier than it ever has to be. They did get a break when Portland big man Yusuf Nurkic, who looked ready to lift the Trailblazers into serious contention, suffered that brutal season-ending broken leg. Now Houston is the biggest threat to the three-peat in the West with Austin Rivers. He's always got a mouth on him, Austin, saying, quote, "If we play defense as we can win the title," unquote. I wouldn't be laughing at that. The Rockets came excruciatingly close last year to beating the Warriors in the playoffs. The endangered sport of baseball, with its average TV viewing age of 57 and minimal engagement with the social media world, launched opening week with a 6-hour and 5-minute game at, yes, Dodger Stadium. This came only months after that 7-hour, 21-minute World Series marathon at Chavez Ravine, another reminder that Major League Baseball's stodgy fat cat powers that be never will grasp the evolution of streamlining and audience engagement here in the 21st century. Only a handful of teams are positioned to win championships in a sport of too many tankers and frauds, but at least the teams that did spend large sums on free agents, the Padres, the Phillies, are seeing early dividends and excitement in their cities. I realize that as the season was beginning, teams did guarantee more than $1.3 billion to 12 players, including the Red Sox and Xander Bogaerts on Sunday, but the owners have still turned this into an explosive issue of salary compensation warfare. It's a one percenter drama now as the upper middle class likes of Craig Kimbrell and Dallas Keuchel remain without jobs. They're just seeking market value for very fine careers. I don't know what market value is anymore. And it doesn't help a dark labor future when MLB awards championship belts, yep, to teams whose salary arbitration departments do the best jobs of winning cases in the offseason, usually by insulting their very own players with damaging data. Nor did it help when Indians owner Larry Dolan told Cleveland fans to enjoy Francisco Lindor while they have him because the Indians will not be entering the $300 million range and up for Lindor. That's the Trout, Harper, Manny Machado club. Lindor could crack that. Mookie Betts will crack it. And what Cleveland is saying is, nope, we're not spending. So the fans can go, okay, we're not coming. They don't go to the games anywhere there. Harper, the sport's most overrated player in one poll of major league players, did launch a 465-foot home run, his first in a Phillies uniform, which prompted a standing ovation and chants of MVP. Bryce certainly is pandering to the Philly fans, wearing green spikes in tribute to the Philly fanatic mascot while saying he wants to visit the Liberty Bell. Really? Who goes to Philadelphia and then says, I want to visit the Liberty Bell? You go to have a cheesesteak, not a Liberty Bell. But at least he's trying to be personable in a sport that sorely lacks the marketing of basketball and football. MLB continues to juice the baseballs to create interest. The Dodgers, they are again, crushed a record 8 homers in opening day. And Paul Goldschmidt, the most cost-efficient of all the free agent signings, blasting 3 home runs in 1 game for the Cardinals. He's going to be great in St. Louis. And Christian Yelich, last year's National League MVP, has hit home runs in his first 4 games for the Brewers. We're seeing long balls and strikeouts and long lull periods between game action. The same old, meaning that so-called Commissioner Rob Manfred has allowed the union to dictate pace of play while he tries to save the sport with legalized gambling interests. That's right, the same sport that bans Pete Rose wants to deep dive into prop bets. Yep. Hypocrisy, Rob Manfred. desperation, too. A much better commissioner, and I've said this before, would be Bob Costas, who is firing hot takes these days, and intelligently so, after his much-needed divorce from stifling, controlling NBC Sports. Here was Costas on Chris Russo's show, wondering how baseball has allowed Fox Sports to minimize postseason baseball coverage while prioritizing regular season college football.
How the hell can you have Game 7 of the LCS between the Brewers and the Dodgers, one step from the World Series, be on FS1, which many people either don't have or casual fans don't know where to find it? And how, by the way, can by contract the almighty high-handed NFL be able to dictate that Joe Buck has to detour from Boston after Game 2 of the World Series on the one-off day prior to Game 3 of the series in Los Angeles, has to detour to Houston for a game between the Texans and I don't even remember who, some utterly meaningless, in the long run, Thursday night football game, has to do that game and then go off to Los Angeles. And by the way, the game turned out to be 18 innings.
Yes, it did.
And it's a tribute to Joe Buck that he's able to do both so capably. But what does that say implicitly? What does that say implicitly? Would the NFL stand for it if during Super Bowl week, if the game was on NBC, Mike Tirico went off to do Bowling Green against Kent State on NBCSN? Would they stand for that?
I mean it. Costas is doing nothing. He should be the commissioner. However, for the same reasons, NBC didn't want his intellect. MLB owners don't want it either, and that's sad. And Robert Kraft continues to attend parties in L.A., this one for a wine venture involving friend John Bon Jovi and his son. Is Bob Kraft living on a prayer? I don't know about that. Will Kraft have enough legal clout to have those solicitation of prostitution charges dropped in Florida? I'm starting to wonder if he will have the clout. Kraft rejected a plea deal as his team argues that police illegally recorded him receiving two rub and tugs, that's what they called them, inside the Florida Day Spa where the Patriots owner was caught engaging in sexual acts from a masseuse. Suppressing the video evidence is exactly what Kraft is seeking here, which would seem to be, right, a stark admission of guilt, because why suppress videos if they don't show him in compromising positions? Yet, if his attorneys do manage to have this case tossed on some sort of technicality or some vagary, Kraft will face no punishment whatsoever from the NFL unless Roger Goodell wants to do his own investigation and look at the video of those rubbing tugs himself. Can you imagine Goodell? Okay, let's call up Bob doing the rubbing tug here. Oh, I would love to be that day. I don't know. I have a feeling it comes down to clout. Nobody has more clout than Kraft, although not with Goodell. Goodell might enjoy looking at the rubbing tugs and then sending a copy to Kraft. Yep. This is all in direct contrast to another prominent executive caught on tape, San Francisco Giants CEO Larry Baer, who was suspended until July the 2nd by Major League Baseball after a public altercation with his wife, Pamela, went viral. His wife took his phone. Baer wanted the phone back, then reached for it. Across a table, you've seen this. It's in Hayes Valley. I used to hang out there at that very coffee kiosk there. His momentum knocked her down. She screamed. People heard it. Somebody takes a viral video, sends it to TMZ, and this is exactly enough to ruin a career these days. When Baer does return, he will keep his titles, but he's definitely going to lose his power to Giants board member Robert Dean. Under Baer, the Giants won 3 World Series in 5 years as the model of front office efficiency. Now they are a dumpster fire on and off the field. And removing Baer from the equation as manager Bruce Bochy retires at season's end might just assure the Giants a very long, ugly future. So just so we have this straight, Bob Kraft, who originally was attached to a sex trafficking ring in his legal case, appears possibly headed to victory, while Larry Baer, who just wanted his phone back and foolishly turned it into a public spectacle, is about to watch his career fade away. Okay. Now it's time for The Buzz, our deep dive into sports and life. Chris joins the program, and Chris, as a Duke fan, I feel bad for you. Are you just a little bit miffed that the great Zion did not take the last three shots? Barrett did, and he didn't have much chance to dominate down the stretch, and shouldn't Coach K be responsible for that? And speaking of Coach K, now that he has to replace four freshmen with a new group, and with talk of one-and-dones being done in the near future, think about this, Chris. Should Krzyzewski be thinking about retirement after his magnificent career?
No retirement, Jay. No retirement. Come on. You can hear I'm a little stuffed up from all the crying I did for Duke losing it. I mean, Michigan State, of all people, Sparty. I'm a little miffed that Zion didn't take the final shots. I think the game plan was a little suspect at the end of the game. But here's the thing. Whenever we're the best team in the country, we being Duke, I never put a lot of stock into actually going all the way. It seems like the years that I don't plan on that, it turns out better. But I said it on this show. I thought the Final Four, I thought the national championship was almost guaranteed to be in play. But that's what happens when you look for guarantees and the magic of March Madness and one shining moment. Coach K, stick around for as long as you can. You're a treasure. He's an American treasure, Jay. And I love him. And even with one and done's going away, Coach K will figure out a way to still lead the mighty Blue Devils deep into the tournament, I hope.
So, Chris, we have a gonzo Final Four, Michigan State, Texas Tech, Virginia, Auburn. I'm not sure what the ratings will be, but who do you have now to win it all? Pick them.
For no other reason than I love the story of Bruce Pearl and maybe Charles Barkley, I'll take the Auburn Tigers, Jay, going all the way. Because nothing would be a more amazing story than that happening.
Chris, you are also a Dodger fan. I don't mean to rub it in. I'm just stating facts. Surely you are concerned that Chavez Ravine has become a death trap and that the Dodgers really don't care about their millions and millions of fans. The place is so poetic and beautiful, Dodger Stadium, yet a woman dies after being smacked in the head by a foul ball. The Dodgers don't even report that for months publicly. And now we have two ugly brawls in recent years, including one this past weekend, resulting in serious head injuries and a man on life support in an L.A. hospital. Chris, I wonder if Vin Scully wants them to remove his name from the street sign. What the hell is going on up there or down there?
Here's what I continue to be amazed by. I continue to be amazed by the amount of money these teams are charging to view a game, to eat at a game, and to park at a game. And for all that, you would think there would be some safety involved. Also, the price of beers that people are getting loaded on and getting into fights, I don't really, like, where's that money coming from? Spend that money in a better place. Don't spend it on going to Dodger Stadium on a Friday night and getting all tanked and then getting into a fight. It's just, it's a bad use of money, Jay. As somebody who grew up a Dodger fan, it really is heartbreaking to see the reputation now that Dodger fans and Dodger Stadium, which, again, to just look at it, it's a majestic place. It's a beautiful place. But there's no doubt some of that majesty is losing its shine when this continues to happen. You know, there were viral videos going out on Twitter Friday night of some of the fights in the pavilion section. Is it really that necessary? I don't get it. It's heartbreaking and it's dangerous. And if I had kids, I wouldn't want to take him to a Dodger game, and that's really, really sad as somebody who's a lifelong Dodger fan. They got to figure it out. They got to make it safe, and there's got to be a no-tolerance aspect to it that might ultimately just cost too much money.
Okay, thanks, Chris, which brings us to quickies, which are just that quick. The Masters is approaching, and for those living on a prayer, there we go again. You know what the song is going to be at the end of this, right? That Tiger Woods will create a full circle comeback from hell and win a green jacket. I guess there's a little hope. His match play win over my Augusta favorite, Rory McIlroy, who, by the way, refused to talk to the media afterward. And while Tiger did go on to miss a 4-foot par putt on 18 to lose his next match, maybe that wasn't a bad thing. He didn't need to go another 36 holes at age 43 after multiple back surgeries and opioid scare and rehab. The bigger story is how Sergio Garcia, who supposedly had redeemed himself for years of immaturity when he finally won the Masters, unraveled yet again when he missed a putt, then missed a hasty backhanded tap-in before he even bothered to clear the conceded putt with Matt Kuchar. I think that was a blip, that green jacket, Sergio, I think. I don't even know how that happened, but Sergio Garcia will always be the goofball first and the Masters champ second. Sorry. Conor McGregor once lived down the street from me in L.A., and he once took over a bar one Sunday afternoon as the life of the party. Now he's the biggest asshole in sports, under investigation for an alleged sexual assault in his native Ireland. This comes as McGregor announces his retirement from mixed martial arts. I don't know if I believe any of this, but our collective world will improve dramatically if Conor McGregor goes to prison and never fights in the octagon again. Please, please go to prison. And not only have the San Diego Padres awakened their dead franchise by signing Machado and Eric Hosmer and putting prized prospect Fernando Tatis Jr. on the opening day roster, they have upped their game in promotions. What do we associate San Diego with? Anchorman, naturally. And in the tradition of the Milwaukee Brewers sausage race, we now have the nightly Anchorman race at Petco Park.
Live from Petco Park, it's the legendary Friar News Team. Let's go down to the field.
All right, fans, it's time to meet San Diego's newest anchorman. Please welcome five-time Emmy Award winner Ron Burgundy, sports anchor Champ Kind, weather with Rick Tamlin, and field reporter Brian Fantetta.
Who won the first race this year? Well, Ron Burgundy won. Just one request. Please don't reenact that alley brawl and leave all tridents at home.
And now a final Mariotti commentary too hot for ESPN, too smart for the internet, and too white male for Jemele Hill. Take it away, Jay.
It's a shame when a young man realizes his father is an ass clown and maybe even a shyster who is swindling him, yet still remains loyal to the old man until it's too late. At long last, Lonzo Ball has severed ties with Daddy LeVar's Big Baller brand and likely will be headed to Nike, no doubt with the guidance of LeBron James. And if Lonzo is smart, he will live his own life now, detached from LeVar, and try to salvage a disappointing two-year NBA career filled with injuries, shooting flaws, maddening inconsistency, and too much reality TV. LeVar the Carnival Barker isn't done yet, blaming his longtime friend, Big Baller Brand co-founder Alan Foster, for the $1.5 million in missing money belonging to Lonzo. This was LeVar over the weekend on a Las Vegas radio station. They always find LeVar, or rather, he always finds the radio station.
And this is what I want people to understand. I'm not going to let one Rudy Poop guy come in here and do something bad and then be like, oh, the brand's not good. The brand is good. It's just somebody did something bad to us. And it's like, here's the thing. We had a snake up in the thing. But you got to understand this. I'm a snake charmer. Even a snake charmer, you're going to get bit. But he can't kill me. So by him doing that negative stuff, I'm not going to make that about this right here. It's about the triple B's, the brand.
But anybody following the LeVar drama the last 3 years and watching how his every decision is with money in mind must have doubts that Foster would be the only one swindling here. I have my doubts. Lonzo has covered up every trace of his Big Baller Brand tattoos, replacing those with Born to Ball, Inc., number two. That's his number. Now, Lonzo might want to tell LeVar to drift away. Just go away, Dad. I don't want to see you for a while. All kids do it. And please, Dad, stop speaking for me. I have my own mouth. For that to happen, Lonzo might have to go public and say it. I am not going to deal with my dad anymore. That would be sad, but he needs to do it because Dad is a bozo, as Charles Barkley and so many others have said. Lonzo cannot grow as a player and as a man until he cuts the cord himself. That's our show. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay, reminding you to never, ever let anybody mute you in life.